Coming up next on Tech News Today, Facebook's content moderation manual leaks to the internet. Supreme Court removes a favored piece of the patent troll playbook. Google's ATAP division is sobering up, and Amazon is appealing to satellites with free bananas. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1773, recorded Monday, May 22nd, 2017.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what you need to know about technology today.
Oh, yeah, we do.
I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell.
You're back from Google I.O.
I know. Was it my suntan showing?
I hope you used sunscreen.
You know, I did, because this year Google was really, really generous with sunscreen. Like, even when you were walking around, you'd find these giant, like, just jugs of sunscreen hanging out, because last year so many people got burned.
Oh, yes.
And they just weren't used to it.
Jugs? So did you have to, like, reach your hand into the jug?
You know, no, you just
okay.
Go, you know.
Okay, thank you for the sound effects.
Well, sometimes it sounds like that. When the bottle's empty, sometimes it does, okay?
Okay.
Everybody's using the sunscreen. Well, sometimes they're empty.
It's true. If you're just listening to this, you wouldn't have seen him place his hand on the imaginary pump.
It would have required
the sound effect.
It's required. All of this stuff paints a picture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a good picture, but there you go.
All right, let's get to the news.
Yeah.
According to the Wall Street Journal, Amazon has given away 1.7 million free bananas. The idea originated from Jeff Bezos himself. His plan was not to force prices down at local businesses selling bananas and things topped with bananas, but that is what they have done. Bezos wanted to offer a free healthy snack to workers and non-workers around the company's headquarters, but now the banistas and the bananagers, that's real.
I
didn't make that up. They're learning that the bananas Amazon has they're the people learning that the bananas that Amazon has hired them to hand out are disrupting the fruit economy in a way that puts the Juicero to shame.
No one puts Juicero in a corner. No one. Some banana math. You want some banana math?
I would love some banana math.
1 million bananas handed out as of November of last year. That would factor out to about 39 per employee if you figure that Amazon has 30,000 employees in the area. Approximately 1.17 million per year, assuming workdays only, if you took that number and kind of figured it out forward. 2 bananas a year per Seattle citizen.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is like banana economics. Banana economics.
So people are saying that it's harder to find bananas at local grocery stores around the Amazon headquarters because of this. The bananagers, they keep track of how many are given away, as you had the banana math. Local restaurants say people bring the bananas into the restaurant. Like, they order granola, they put their free banana on top of the granola, they leave the peels, they're having to... Amazon is just never not really thinking before they had this banana plan.
Yeah, it sounds like Bezos really just wanted to give back to the community. Thank you.
He's giving
banana
back.
Banana phone. He's giving bananas. That's more of a green banana. I don't eat green bananas. I eat yellow bananas, Brian. Thank you for trying. This is very, very nice effort. He wanted to give back to the community. Anybody can stop by. So apparently they have a couple of banana stands that anybody can frequent on a daily basis, business days only, Monday through Friday. I don't know how I feel about this. It's obviously a top story.
Yeah, obviously.
for obvious reasons, we must talk about this first.
I was fascinated by Amazon's ability to disrupt everything, including free bananas. But if you want to move on to something more important, go ahead.
Well, do you think that maybe... Actually, this is a pretty big transition.
I know.
So one to the other. This isn't easy, but here we go. Facebook has a rule book for how its employees are expected to moderate all of the types of content that people share on its network that aren't what you would say good for business. And The Guardian posted parts of those leaked policies in a series of articles called Facebook Files over the weekend. The codes and rules cover the gamut of potentially bad behavior on the network, but also reveal the complex determinations a network as big as Facebook needs to make from an ethical standpoint, with a number of inconsistencies within those policies. This is kind of seems to come down to Facebook needs to monitor, like, okay, there's almost two billion users at this point, not quite, but you know, you've got a lot of activity all the time. They've grown relatively quickly in the grand scheme of things. Just tons of new content posted every second. How do you keep up on it? They've got to make determinations as far as what's acceptable on the network and what is not. But when you really start to kind of read through kind of what they've determined, for example, describing how to murder someone is allowed on the Facebook network, but a direct threat to murder someone is not. So you can talk about how you do it. You just can't talk about how you're going to do it to this person. Violent language is permissible until specificity points out a plan or a plot. So think about that one. Allowing child abuse to be shown. So they allow child abuse to be shown with the kind of purpose to be allowing for that child to be identified or rescued, unless it's shared with sadism and celebration, which, I mean, you can, and you can kind of understand the choice there, like to allow for that child to be identified and rescued, which you can get behind. But then at the same time, it's basically Facebook on the other hand saying, yeah, it's okay to share, you know, child abuse on the network with it within limits, you know, sadism and celebration. It's just it's a weird guide to read through. And like on one hand, like when I read through it, of course, something like this exists because a company the size of Facebook and with all of the potholes that you can fall into in this regard, they need to make determinations. But I don't know. Some of it just doesn't make sense in the grand scheme of things, I suppose.
Can we talk about bananas again?
No.
Okay. Yeah, this is a horrible story, but I'm glad that there are 100 manuals for this sort of thing. There needs to be. I don't want to be the person that has to look through all of these terrible videos, but there are a lot of terrible videos. And my first temptation is to say, like, oh, people are horrible. But most people are not horrible. There are just a lot of people, and some of them are horrible. And so they have to make these very specific rules. There are some gray areas around bullying and violence and animal abuse that some other person has to decide. And I'm glad that Facebook is doing this. That's the thing. We always sort of guess that they were doing it. It's not like they came out and said, here's our guide to animal abuse and child abuse. You know, this was The Guardian obtained these, through a source. And so it is a really important issue. When you were gone last week, Nate and I reported a story about a man who had said he saw a video of a man being beaten by a police officer. And his response to it was, we have to go burn that guy's house down. And it was like, he didn't really mean we're going to go burn the house down. But there was a warrant out for his arrest and he found out about it and he went and turned himself in and he said, here's this misunderstanding. Like he has to do community service. But like there is this very gray area, like you said, between like intent to hurt someone versus just blowing off steam. And if there has to be a guide to what the difference is, and there has to be, like you said, a line in the sand, then good that there is.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big challenges here, of course, is because of the amount of content that they have, none of these decisions are made until it's actually reported, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we've already seen this time and time again. There have been a lot of examples this year, especially as far as, you know, this content that's able to live long enough to kind of do damage or whatever. But none of it is, you know, removed because of the sheer amount of it until someone actually reports it. And sometimes that can be after it's been shared and, you know, a million times, or it's been active for days before it's ever caught. So I think ultimately what this manual, after reading it, I have respect for anyone who moderates this type of content, because it's such a high pressure situation. I can't even imagine being put in this position. Mind you, it's your job, but being put into this position and having to carry the weight of a lot of the stuff that happens on the network.
Yeah,
it's just kind of crazy.
Hopefully they're providing some sort of, you know, resources for the people that are in charge of doing this.
I would imagine so.
You know, I know you hear about like people who work in hospice and, you know, that sort of thing. Like there are a lot of jobs that take a lot out of you that have to be done. And so hopefully they are getting the support for that.
Yeah, for sure.
Microsoft co-founders Bill Gates and Paul Allen are just two of the big wigs investing $29 million total in Echodyne, an autonomous tech company behind the radar vision used in drones and self-driving cars. Echodyne sensors are bringing in the big bucks in part because they've been around since 2014, which was just before the autonomous vehicle craze really hit, and partly because its sensors are designed to work through the rain, the snow, and other adverse weather conditions. Echodyne's $10,000 radar array for military-grade drones weighs less than 2 pounds and is about the size of a phablet. Although the picture of
Don't say the word phablet.
I'm not allowed to say the word phablet?
Oh, I just hate that word.
Well, what would you compare it to?
No, believe me, I've said it a million times. It's just...
There's a picture of it. Yeah. And it's with someone's hand. So obviously, as we've learned in the last few years, people's hands could be all different sizes.
Well, you know.
What would you say that
yeah,
is?
No, that's I think you're absolutely right on the size. Although I might use a banana for scale.
Maybe an iPad mini size.
I mean, LiDAR, apparently, with the LiDAR technology and camera technology, is really effective in certain environments. But when you're talking about like a lot of weather, be it fog, dust, just like heavy weather or, you know, nasty climates or whatever.
Toads falling to the sky.
Potentially toads. I imagine that would probably wreak a lot of havoc. Mm-hmm. It's not as effective. So this sounds like a great way around that, kind of deal with all different types of weather and climate. And they're certainly in the market at the right time, right? Like everybody, we're going to talk about here in a few stories, everybody's getting on board 100% with all this technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can spot a small plane from 1 to 2 miles away. That's like orders of magnitude better than an Amazon drone or a Google drone or whatever they're using. It's not for your like kid's toy drone. That's not what we're talking about. Unless you want to spend $10,000 on your kid's toy drone. And I am not one to judge.
Could you buy me one too? Thanks. The U.S. Supreme Court saw unanimous support in the case of TC Heartland versus Kraft Foods that will affect how patents are litigated, which has many in technology circles breathing a sigh of relief. The ruling in the case held that patent litigation cases must be held in the state where the company is incorporated and not in any state that that company does business. This means that a common technique that's employed by patent trolls of choosing districts that are historically friendly to infringement claims will no longer work as effectively as it has in the past. I've seen a number of cases over the past however many years where it all comes down to this, you know, the case happening in East Texas in particular, where 40%+ of patent suits in the Eastern District pass through. 90% of those originate from patent trolls. It's just an area that is super friendly to patent litigation. And, you know, often the cases would be taken there purposefully if the business does any business in that area, which, you know, these technology internet companies, they probably do, right? The internet goes everywhere. And so this is kind of removing that tool from their tool belt, thanks to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were always taken there. Any cases there were taken there for that reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a huge thriving tech market in East Texas. I've spent some time in East Texas. It's a wonderful place. I feel bad for all the lunch places that are going to maybe have to pick up and go elsewhere because they were being completely supported by all the lawyers that were eating there, all the patent lawyers. So I read one of the patent lawyers said this isn't going to stop patent trolls. You know, of course, non-practicing entities is a nice way to call patent trolls, mm-hmm. but it will change the conversation. So, you know, it will just say, you know what, this was a decades old law. Like, you know, it needs to be changed in mm-hmm. order to, you know, and the reason behind this is innovation. Like a lot of these patent trolls are really stopping or slowing down innovation.
Yeah. And they exist primarily to kind of hoard these things. And then, when the time is right, strike companies like Google and Apple. I mean, they're constantly targeted in scenarios like this because their product and technology portfolio is so wide and so vast that someone that's holding on to, you know, patent technology or patents for technology can kind of just wait and monitor until they see something that might cross those lines and then, you know, become involved with the case and move it along. So, yeah, I suppose we'll see. Obviously, patent trolls aren't going away, but this time and time again, this would be the way that it would go down. It would end up in this Texas district and, you know, then it was kind of game over for the most part. So good to see there's a change there from the top down.
Ford has replaced its CEO with the head of its autonomous car division, Jim Hackett. A representative says the current CEO, who's been in the position less than 3 years, chose to retire and was not fired, no matter what anyone says. Whatever the case, the car company is clearly taking a step to compete with Tesla and others as they push into the realm of self-driving cars. Before being tapped as CEO, Hackett had been in charge of Ford Smart Mobility, and he has a history of turning companies around. So he doesn't necessarily have a long history in autonomous cars or really even a background in technology, but he's worked for different organizations and he's turned them around. So that's what Ford is really saying. Like, this is what we need, someone who can think fast, act fast. Because Ford's a little bit behind GM, certainly behind Tesla. And the autonomous car, it's working fast. The autonomous car business is moving fast.
Yeah, it's moving along. I mean, Ford has said that they want to have a fully autonomous vehicle in the marketplace on the roads by 2021. This really kind of strikes me as Ford realizing they need to do something, like especially in the past couple of years, and especially in the last year, they've been criticized by investors who've been basically saying that Ford is just too far behind when it comes to developing high-tech cars for the future. Ford sales were down 25% this year. Profit in Q1 dropped 30% year over year. They aborted their $1.6 billion assembly plant in Mexico earlier this year. It's just like one thing after another. And a few weeks ago, shareholders on a call were basically taking Ford to task very seriously about the direction. So it's interesting that he stepped down and did not get fired. I'm sure they reached some sort of an agreement is what the reality is. But Ford needed to do something. And it's very convenient that autonomous vehicles is such a hot kind of buzzword right now and seems to be the direction that everything's heading. Maybe Ford can recoup itself by signaling that it's kind of dedicating itself to this particular part of the future and becoming, you know, a better competitor to the others that are already doing a lot of work in this field.
Absolutely.
Google I.O. is but a distant memory, but one thing that I gotta admit bummed me out a little bit this year was a distinct lack of Google's ATAP, also known as Advanced Technologies and Products Group. One of my favorite parts of Google I/O, at least a few years running anyways. Joining us to talk about how the group is changing is Steve Kovac from Business Insider. How's it going, Steve?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back. So you wrote this article last week. I read it actually heading into Google I/O, and it confirmed my own suspicions about I/O probably being ATAP-less. There was none of that on the agenda. Super happy to see the articles getting a little love today on Tech Meme. What happened to the band of pirates? What kept them from I/O this year?
Yeah, it was interesting. So I spent a couple of weeks talking to current and former employees in the division, and it's really interesting to see how a lot of wind got sucked out of the division after Regina Dugan, who founded it with this very interesting premise that it could be like this DARPA-like research center within Google, semi-autonomous from the rest of Google. But after she left, it became just another division of the hardware group under Rick Osterloh. And instead of doing crazy pie-in-the-sky piratey things, they're more focused on let's make stuff that can ship and or if it doesn't ship as a standalone product, can be or help inform like the main hardware, consumer hardware roadmap.
What does it say about a department in a company like Google that a single person, Regina Dugan, she had incredible influence over this department, obviously, and she brought a lot of excitement along with it. If you ever saw those I/O talks that she was heading, tons of excitement. And that was part of the reason why it was so much fun to be there. You felt like you were being let in on this really cool secret. What does it say about a department at Google that is, so characterized by a single person that once that person leaves, it seems to kind of dissolve and fall a little bit apart as a result?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily falling apart. I mean, there's continuing to work on stuff. The Project Jacquard, that, you know, the jacket that you can control your smartphone with, that's supposedly going to ship later this year. But, you know, they've really changed focus since she left. And she was a figurehead and she was well loved. A lot of, when she left for Facebook's Building 8, a lot of top executives within the ATAP followed her because they believed in her vision. And you can just look at the roster of people who followed her. They're literally recreating ATAP at Building 8. So yeah, without her, she was the lifeblood of that division. And so it knocked a lot of the wind out of it.
So you and describe them as a band of pirates, the ATAP.
They describe themselves as that.
Right. They, but not anymore, right? So sad, because you say they're lowering the pirate flag, which is just like the saddest thing. How much of this is tied up into the failure of Project Ara, like the modular smartphone that was, you know, so many people were so excited about, and just, you know, after Dugan left and so many things fell apart, and now we'll never see it?
Well, I don't think it was tied necessarily just to Ara. There are a lot of factors here you got to keep in mind. Now, Ara was a project that was super close to launching. I mean, it was last, you know, end of last summer that, you know, they were, had marketing materials ready. They kept talking about it. And then before you know it, about a month before the Pixel hits, they scrapped the project. And that was a bold move because there was a lot of money tied up in it. They had hundreds of people working on this project. And the fact that they killed it, a lot of people are seeing this as Rick Osterloh's influence, that he didn't want it sucking the wind out of what's going on with the Pixel and the more mainstream products. And so the let's put more wood behind fewer arrows, as one source put it to me, and really focus on the Pixel line of phones and kind of cast Ara aside. They learned a lot working on Ara. They can, you know, put that into use in the future and future products. But to have two phones come out at around the same time just doesn't make sense when they're really trying to build this mainstream hardware division.
Yeah, that's a really good point. If they really wanted to put their effort behind the Pixel and make Pixel successful, which they're still in the process of. I mean, Pixel has been, is a great phone and has done reasonably well, I would say. It's actually pretty hard to secure if you're trying to buy one regularly. They're out of stock. Who knows if that's planned or not, but whatever. But if that's your goal, is to make sure that performs well, clouding the marketplace with another effort, probably not the best way to go. But like you said, man, they were so close to release.
Yeah.
They were saying all along that, you know, Project Ara, yes, it's meant for the mainstream. This is going to be the way people do their phones in the future. I don't know if I ever bought it, but I feel like it was indicative of why ATAP exists, to do weird things like this and then hopefully end up bringing it to market.
Yeah, and one cool thing I learned about Ara was the, you know, building block like phone that we saw in all those demos, that was just phase one. One person told me who was working on the project, phase two, they had a more mainstream looking phone that could also have modules. And, you know, it looked more like a mainstream premium phone, a la like the iPhone or Samsung Galaxy S8, that would have a more mainstream appeal because, you know, mom and dad aren't going to go buy this weird Lego block looking thing. So it was clear that even their roadmap kind of conflicted with what they wanted to do with the Pixel line.
A lot of the criticism of Google I.O. was like, oh, we didn't really see anything. There was not, you know, some people said, like, Google is boring now. And, you know, there was nothing tangible. But there was a lot of really interesting artificial intelligence announcements. There was a lot of, you know, talk about data. And what do you think that has to do with it? I mean, because that's something that isn't tangible. It's hard for people to wrap their minds around it. Unless you talk about, like, AlphaGo, like beating, you know, the Go champion. It's hard for us to really understand, even technical people, what all of that artificial intelligence stuff means.
Yeah, there are two ways to look at it. If you look at the hardware division now, I feel like a lot of their efforts there are just more ways to get that Google Assistant and Google AI into people's hands and do it the way Google wants it to be done. And at the same time, a lot of the stuff that we saw, actually, I just put this story up on Business Insider, my analysis of what happened last week. I think they're getting a little ahead of themselves. You know, they keep saying, you know, one of their big themes of the entire show, they even put a slide up about this saying, we're going from a mobile first to an AI first company. I think it's a little too early for that. A lot of the demos they showed were, you know, voice control and AI trying to mimic the, trying to mimic the functions of what you do on a smartphone, and just didn't make sense. Like they did that Panera Bread demo where you order a Panera sandwich just by talking. And I think Ben Thompson of Stratechery, he put it really well. He was like, why would I spend 60 seconds doing something with my voice when I can spend 20 seconds doing it, you know, just tapping on a smartphone? So I think they're still trying to figure out like how to platformize AI and really make this something that people want to build into, and trying to recreate what you already do better on a smartphone or a computer, you know, something with a screen. They're still trying to figure that out. There are a lot of things AI makes sense for and voice control makes sense for. You know, what's the weather, what's the news, you know, audio cues like that. But when it comes to like the chatbot like stuff, it's clear that it's just not better, a better experience in your smartphone. And this quest to like kill the smartphone is not going to happen from the AI that we're seeing today.
Yeah, everybody wants to be there from the beginning, be it autonomous vehicles, be it artificial intelligence. It really seemed from I/O that what Google was doing was, it felt like they were laying the foundation to be the platform that everybody uses for AI when AI is, you know, so, you know, is a part of everybody's tool set. And they're starting to kind of open that up now. But I think you're right in the sense that they might be a little bit ahead of that curve, but they got to be there early on in order to prove, you know, that they are the ones to help people do that. As far as ATAP is concerned, what do we know of any kind of products that are kind of in the works right now that would qualify, that maybe we would have seen on the stage had there been any sort of unveiling?
Yeah, there's one thing I heard of, and it's hard to describe because it wasn't described very well to me by a couple of people who knew about it, but it's basically a smartphone without a screen. That was kind of how it was described to me. And it's based on this theory of effective computing where you use more emotions and other signals to control a gadget or receive information from a gadget. That's about as detailed as I got it. And you got to keep in mind that this project, it's probably been in the works since Regina was still there. And it's very light. It doesn't sound like what an ATAP in 2017 would be working on. So there was some skepticism about it. One person said, it's like this handheld device. It's like something you'd see on Kickstarter, which didn't really sound like a re-endorsement. So, you know, it sounds like they're really being, you know, corporatized and becoming part of the larger Google machine, which you've seen across all of Google and seen across all of Alphabet, really reining in expenses, really making sure there's not a lot of overlap in projects and making sure everyone across multiple divisions are on the same page. And, you know, the true spirit of what ATAP was originally founded to be is being hurt by that.
Yeah, and now, of course, you have Regina Dugan over at Facebook doing a similar thing there, like you had said. She spoke at the F8 conference not too long ago. What did she talk about there? She at least spoke a little bit about some projects they're working on over there.
Yeah, and she gave her vision for some. It was the kind of speech you would have expected to see at I/O this year, right? It was talking about using your brain to type or using your skin to hear, you know, just really pie in the sky stuff, like crazy communication without like actually talking or typing, just like basically using your mind to compute. And that's the kind of thing you would have expected to come out of ATAP and the kind of thing you would have expected ATAP employees and contractors to be working on. But she's basically cloned ATAP over at Facebook and doing it at Building 8. And they're also working on other stuff like drone technology and more near-term stuff like AR glasses and things like that, that they can release, you know, within the next 5 or 10 years. But it's just kind of unfortunate that it's unfortunate for Google, rather, that it's happening at Facebook and not at Google.
Yeah, you know, now the more I think about it, the more I totally feel what you were saying, Megan, as far as AI, because a few years ago, it's not like AI is a new thing, but it's certainly something that is being capitalized on right now and being realized, the power and the strengths of what neural networks can do for our technology. 2 or 3 years ago at an ATAP, you could totally see them proposing a lot of the things that we're seeing as just like mainstream, you know, components of normal technology today. And maybe that's why the shift, because our technology in some ways has caught up to kind of the mystery and the potential of the future of technology that we would have seen a couple of years in ATAP. It's all converging, I suppose. So
yeah. And you got to ask yourself realistically, do you see something like Jackard becoming a mainstream mass consumer product? Probably not. It's more of an experiment.
Yeah.
And so they're really being tasked with finding stuff that can become more mainstream.
Yeah.
I'm still upset that, because they promised smart pants, but really they came out with a smart jacket. So
you never know. Next year, if Jackard continues, we'll see about that. Steve Kovac, businessinsider.com. Thank you so much, Steve. It's always great getting
you on. Thanks for having me. Yeah, take care.
All right. Have a great night.
We got some feedback from Bill. He writes, it was because of one of your stories that I heard about Free Code Camp. I'm now taking that class and loving it. I really love to code. Thank you guys so much for doing what you do. I've been listening for years. I never wrote you, but I just wanted to say thank you very much. You have a lifelong listener here. Thank you, Bill.
That means we have to do this for the rest of our lives.
I hope it's okay. I forwarded your email to Quincy Larson. He was our guest. He started Free Code Camp. And so hopefully we'll have him on again at some time in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much for writing in. TNT's fan of the day is John Clark on Twitter, who sent us this picture with his feet all kicked up. You can kind of see it down at the bottom there. Watching TNT on his big screen saying, UK calling. Apparently we're playing in the UK too. Hey, we're a worldwide outfit. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Or you can even email us at tnt@twit.tv and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it.
Grab your waterproof Kindles. Bill Gates has just released his summer reading list. Includes many of the books on my summer reading list of books that I will probably never get around to reading, including Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance and Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. Gates says his recommended list of 5 books includes stories that pushed him out of his comfort zone.
That's probably a healthy thing to do. Does Bill Gates do this every year?
He does it every year.
5 books?
Yes, that was how I heard about The Grid, which was the book by Gretchen Bakke, and she was on his list last year, and then I read that and interviewed her for Triangulation. She was great to talk to, so you can check that out. Do you have anything on your list this summer?
Oh, boy. Do I have anything on my list? No, I don't think that I do. I have the time to read?
Well, you have time to make lists of books that you'll probably never read.
That's true. Well, no, what I've realized now is that Bill Gates has released a list of 5 books year after year after year. So I've got a lot of catching up to do, apparently, because I would imagine he probably picks out some pretty great books. How long has he been doing this?
I don't know, a decade at least, I think. I mean, for a while. He comes up with books like holiday reading lists, too. If Bill Gates has time, you have time.
Good point. I have no excuse.
Here's what's sitting by my bed that I have not cracked open, because unfortunately, I also now have a TV in the bedroom and I've been watching Fargo instead of reading Data and Goliath by Bill Schneier. So maybe we should start a book club.
Oh, okay.
You want to read it together?
TNT book club?
Yeah. That's, if anybody's read Data and Goliath, let me know if it's worth reading, or maybe just give me the cliff notes. But we want to know what you're reading, too. So email us at tnt@twit.tv. We want to get suggestions of other books to add to that nice pile of aspirational books that someday we hope to read.
Or that nice pile of aspirational audiobooks, in my case, because I really don't like sit down and read. I listen. I listen while I'm on my way. That's how I make it work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about the only way
I'm okay with listening. Yeah, like I listen to probably at least 1 book a month, but that doesn't count.
Why doesn't it count? It's still reading.
Because I think we still have to put words and hold and read.
Although I
see, that's what happens, because then maybe I could speak in full sentences again if I read as much as I used to.
I appreciate the ritual of reading. I appreciate the idea of forcing yourself to take out time to just stop what else you're doing and stop, you know, and just sit down or lay down and focus on words on a page. Actually, I do. I read a lot. I read to my kids every single night and have for years.
I think they would really enjoy Bruce Schneier's book.
Do you think? I do. It would really be a really good bedtime story for them. I have a really good feeling.
They need to know what's going on with their data.
They'll fall asleep within like five sentences of that book.
The trick.
So, hey, that works for me. And then I'll continue to read to myself. TNT. Oh, sorry. Burke doesn't think audiobooks count. Oh, you're one of those, are you? Kids read. That's true. That's true. Sometimes my kids listen to audiobooks too,
but mainly they
read.
They both. I think both is good for everyone.
Yeah, agreed. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
Share your thoughts on the stories we discuss in the TNT subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com or list your favorite books, technical or not, that you're reading. Find the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me about the books that you're reading, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howe. Thanks to Brian, our technical director and today's featured editor. Thanks to Burke for helping out here at the studio, an occasional Burke chat. And thanks to you. Always, every single day, for talking tech with us. We'll see y'all on tomorrow. Bye.